Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to this edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Segment 5 of our enthralling 6-installment series of the best and mosts and worsts of 2012 politically. We've gone through 4 of those already. Check the archives at National Review Online or the Dateline website to catch up on any awards that you've missed, because I'm sure you'll want to be talking about those at all your New Year's parties. And we'll have our final edition with the most prestigious awards on Monday, New Year's Eve. So, Jim, 3 more today, as always. One is underreported story, most underreported, then most overreported, then the best story of 2012. We'll end on a high note, the most underreported story of 2012.
It's not that this is a story that doesn't get any attention, but I do feel like it, the public doesn't really understand it and doesn't really feel like it ever gets portrayed in the clarity and kind of vividness that it requires. I'm just going to argue the national debt. I mean, people know that the debt is really high, although apparently not the president. When asked by David Letterman right before the election, the total was $16 trillion, and Obama said, oh, I don't know this precise figure, and managed to not mention it, which is kind of egregious. I kind of use the metaphor from the cinematic classic Transformers, Greg. Although I guess really technically from Transformers 2, Revenge of the Fallen, in which a whole bunch of giant evil robots from outer space come together and form a giant robot like 500 feet tall, smashing across the landscape. And I thought about that, Greg, and you're probably thinking, my God, where is this metaphor going? And thinking, that's the national debt, Greg. You could think about our entitlement programs being one part of the giant robot monster, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, the tax base shrinking as more people retire being another part of it. You could talk about discretionary spending. You could talk about the squeeze on defense spending and the fact that the world's not getting any safer, you know. All kinds of you know, the possibility of our currency being less worth less in the future, all that stuff together forms this giant devastator robot coming along. And if we saw a giant robot smashing across the American landscape, well, then you'd see this giant national effort to do something to stop the giant robot that's, you know, smashing things. The problem is the debt is abstract. It's a number. It's a really big number. It's a number that's so large, you know. Saul Alinsky once came out and said that most people can't tell the difference between millions, billions, and trillions. Once you hit 7 figures, it all just becomes a whole bunch of numbers to people. It's more money than they're ever going to see in their whole lives, and thus they kind of tune it out, and you know, people don't pay attention to it. I wish there was a giant robot smashing the landscape, Greg. Not because I want to see the landscape smashed, although that's the inner Godzilla fan of me might find that pretty cool. But it really is the idea of a way to visually represent the threat the debt represents to our future. And for as long as it's this abstract number that gets mentioned every now and then, I don't think people really feel stirred to take action and look seriously at the problem and look seriously at controlling spending and look seriously at every single thing our government buys and asking whether we need it and the unsustainability of our entitlement programs and all of that stuff. So maybe, you know, maybe I need to make a movie about called a creature called Debtatron or something like that that comes along and he says that each time the government spends more money, it gets bigger or something like that. But we need something very dynamic and visual and eye-catching to focus people's attention on this, because I think the polling indicates most people, given a chance, will ignore it until it's too late and ends up having terrible fiscal consequences for all of us.
Underreported and certainly underappreciated, as you mentioned, when you look at just how much the debt grew in the past 4 years and how much that didn't matter when the votes finally came in. Pretty depressing, and some of that has to be on the media, but a lot of it's on the voters. They're the ones who ultimately make the decision. Mine for underreported is almost a double whammy, because it's bad enough when a story is covered one way, kind of falsely to give a certain impression, and then completely ignored to avoid giving the opposite impression. And that's coverage of Hurricane Sandy. For the first couple of days, the national media was just enthralled with itself. President Obama's holding an emergency strategy session with governors and emergency personnel. And oh my gosh, he's on the beach. He's hugging a Republican. This is just amazing. And then once he gets back on the campaign trail, only Fox News is out there showing Staten Island in complete ruins, as well as certain areas of the Jersey Shore and even up into Long Island and Connecticut, where there's no power. There's things being condemned, this water and this debris and just this complete disaster. No response whatsoever from local authorities or FEMA. And everybody just whistles and looks the other way in the National Press Corps. Whereas, as we saw from Hurricane Katrina, depending on what party's in power, the quality of the cleanup is remarkably different. So that is definitely one of my most frustrating stories of the year. All right, Jim, most overreported story.
I will go toe-to-toe with any other Republican about the desire to beat former Congressman Todd Akin with some sort of Christmas ham or something like that. Just, you know, pummel him over his bad judgment. But I observe that Todd Akin is one guy who made a comment in a televised interview about the notion that it was very difficult or impossible for a woman to get pregnant from the act of rape. It was a terribly stupid comment, and he deserved, you know, just about all of the grief and criticism he got for it. What was kind of amazing is that, one, almost everyone in America knew about that instantaneously. Almost, or as soon as it became big news to the liberal blogs, it kind of got broadcast out to the world. And how much every other Republican in the country got tarred with Akin. Now, I've argued in the past that, look, if you're going to talk about abortion in cases of rape and you oppose it, you're going to have to be able to answer that question really, really well. That's a difficult issue in the very best of circumstances. It is exponentially exacerbated if you're not familiar with basic human biology the way Todd Akin was. And I just, you know, did it deserve scrutiny and coverage? Absolutely, certainly in the state of Missouri. I don't think it deserved the national coverage that it did. And it was, I believe, the first question that was asked of President Obama in his one of his rare press conferences was, Mr. President, do you think Todd Akin speaks for other Republicans? It really was an egregious. It was the kind of question you and I would make as a parody of biased liberal media bias questions. So while Akin deserved some coverage, I think he was the most astonishingly overcovered Senate candidate of 2012.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth right there. Mine is not as big of a story or as overarching story, but it was also a very annoying story, and I can sum it up in four words, Jim. What about your gaffes? Mitt Romney's trip to Europe, where he mentioned a couple of things that were hiccups in security leading up to the opening of the London Summer Olympic Games. His staffer had some less than PG words to say while Mitt Romney was laying a wreath at the tomb of a soldier in Poland, and then comments that I still can't figure out why those were considered a gaffe in Israel. The media went on this trip looking for anything, and they really did scrape the bottom of the barrel to try and find anything that would make it look like Mitt Romney wasn't ready for prime time. Ultimately, I don't think that's what cost him the election, but it was another pathetic example of the mainstream news media.
And I've heard some speculation about which reporter on the Romney beat it was. All I'm going to say, clearly it's a woman of some kind. And Greg, all I can just say is, boy, there must be some lucky fellow who, you know, gets to come home to that sweet melodic voice of, you know, honey, I'm home. Did you take out the garbage? Remember, the car needs the oil change. Sonny, I forgot. What about your gas? Many ignoble moments for the mainstream media this year. That ranks up there as perhaps the, you know, fingernails across the blackboard moment. So.
On to some happier fare for the final martini for today. Jim, the best story of 2012.
You know, I have a very strange nomination here, but I'm actually going to let me walk you through it. And I guess I'll just say that, look, there was immediately after the awful events of September 11th, both the angry mob storming the embassy in Cairo and then the mob storming our facility in Benghazi, this administration wanted people to not make a big deal out of it. And so the explanation was that it was a YouTube video. And right after the Democrats had spent a large number of time emphasizing that al-Qaeda was on its heels and we were winning the war on terror, to have some, you know, a terrible attack, killing Americans, killing a U.S. ambassador on September 11th looked pretty terrible. And so the administration did everything possible to kind of distract us from it. And it is small victories for us. Now, obviously, people would argue an insufficient number of victories, but the YouTube explanation is now thoroughly refuted, and the government no longer sticks to it, which I think is actually a victory for us. They wanted this story to go away, and this story did keep coming back, sometimes with assistance from the mainstream media, from the likes of Laura Logan of CBS News, Anderson Cooper, Jake Tapper. I know not nearly in the amount of attention that some folks on the right would like to see, but the mainstream media did not follow orders on this. And then finally, Susan Rice was, you know, the spokesperson, the person who was sent out to all the Sunday shows to offer the "it was all the YouTube video's fault" explanation. It was a bad performance, and as we just heard earlier this month, she will not be the next Secretary of State as a result of that. Other might say that they'd like to see, you know, starker consequences for this. Susan Rice may end up being some other job in the administration, but hey, at least one person has paid a price in career ambitions for the Benghazi lies. And as much as it says something about this, you know, the type of year that this is the best story of it. However, you know, Benghazi's story stayed alive because a lot of people would not quit and kept asking questions and kept reporting things and kept putting this front and center. And as frustrating as a year it is, I think we ought to, you know, recognize when we do accomplish some things. And the administration did not get what it wanted to sweep the Benghazi story under the rug.
Very well stated. And that is a important and positive aspect to that story, because they didn't get away with what they tried to get away with. And even though they did have a lot of collaboration in the media to help them get away with it, but they didn't. As for me, I had a couple of nominees on the personal front. The birth of my daughter was probably number one. In fact,
goes without saying.
I can guarantee it's number one.
Now I feel bad. I should have made that my number one, too.
And, you know, even in the wake of some of these tragedies, seeing communities come together in the wake of the hurricane, like we mentioned a moment ago, or just recently with a horrific school shooting in Connecticut, watching people come together to support their neighbors and be there for them in any way that they can is just a hallmark of what makes America great. And in the true light of that, my actual choice is the U.S. Summer Olympic team. They did a great job. And in a year when we were told that the government's going to take care of everything, you don't need to worry about it, 47% and all this stuff, we saw the best of what happens when people commit their lives and their time and to being the very, very best they can be. And for very many of them, on the largest stage in what they do, they came out as grand champions. You think of Michael Phelps, obviously, Ryan Lochte, Missy Franklin in swimming, Gabby Douglas, who's like America's sweetheart now in gymnastics, as well as many of the other folks in gymnastics who did well. The track team did well, and basketball, of course, across the board, and in many other sports, which I don't have time to mention. But once again, chanting USA always feels great, and they gave us many reasons to be proud, and I'll always be happy to do that.
I agree with all those, Greg, although I will note, I think, you know, we should just acknowledge that just as it's been a terrible year for the New York Jets, sometimes the best story of the year has a rebuilding year. And I think it was a rebuilding year for our best stories. hopefully 2013 will be better. Come back next year, folks.
Jim, well, we'll talk to you on Monday when we'll have the biggest awards of the year, including Person of the Year, Turncoat of the Year, and our much-anticipated resolutions for 2013. So I'm sure everyone will be tuning in then. Jim, have a great weekend.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Monday for the final 3-Martini Lunch of 2012.